and Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 25th on the West Coast, now September the 26th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. And I got it right tonight. Didn't do it backwards. It's nice to welcome also anyone listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, either live or on a post-dated archive, as well as on blogtalkradio.com. I'd like to welcome all the members of the U.S. military around the planet that are possibly listening in tonight, and want to let you know you're probably going to find something in tonight's show interesting. Because our regular guest is an expert in science, and we often talk about things military and extraterrestrial and that sort of stuff. So there's no telling where we're going to go tonight. Let me just speak about a little, I don't even know if you could call this news. This sounds like business as usual. But I got to hear a few of these G20 related, UN related speeches going on in New York. And I got to listen to Benjamin Netanyahu. And then today, the long legged Mac Daddy had a press conference aired on CNN. I don't know if it occurred today or yesterday or when, but anymore, I guess it doesn't really matter. But I just heard nothing but lies. Nothing but lies. The reason we're in Afghanistan is to hunt down Al-Qaeda because they were responsible for the murder of some 3,000 people on 9/11, 2001. And the reason for extra soldiers is to wipe out the Taliban now. So we had this this campaign promise of ending the war, but instead it's escalated. It's just one lie after another. And I'll tell you, I was so incensed by what I heard that even my bird commented about it. I'll just say that. I won't repeat what he said over the airwaves, but trust me, he saw through it like I did. And when it's touching the animal kingdom, that's really speaking volumes for what's going on. We had a number of demonstrations and riots and police brutality occurring in Pittsburgh, where the G20 event is actually occurring, and I find it interesting that only the spin slant, if anything at all, is reported on the mainstream media. They're actually referring to these people who are protesting this international corruption and this proposed New World Order, One World Government. They're calling them anarchists. Imagine that. The propaganda media calling people who are demonstrating and really demanding that our Constitution be honored as well as international law that's already created. These people are violating every single law they could ever dream up. They violate them before they even create them. And they just throw these out to give us something else to talk about. Well, we're going to give that subject no more time this evening, but bring on tonight's guest. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. He is our resident science advisor on Evident Footprints, and he has appeared on this show as a guest more than anyone else in the world. So he holds that record, believe it or not. My good friend, scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, Don, I'm actually in pretty good spirits, despite the fact that there seems to be a perpetual cloud of gloom hanging over everything. Couldn't help but feel some emotional churning while I was listening to your description about the latest rumblings from the long-legged daddy. But there are also other things afoot which haven't hit the media yet, and my own informants, as well as yours, are aware of some of these things. And actually, I wanted to start my presentation this evening by reading a short report that I received, which touches on one of these hidden agendas that are going on. And this one is very important, and I believe it'll affect all of us. Whether you're in favor of this doctrine or not, it doesn't make any difference. We should be allowed to have choice. And
yes,
the fact that we're not having choice in an awful lot of things these days should give us the willies, because you know where it's headed. It's only a question of time.
Yes. Well, be my guest, Jim. The floor is all yours. So is the mic.
All right, well, I'll just start off by reading it, because there's no real introduction that'll do it justice. The headlines say, "Now all guns must be listed on your next 2010 tax return." And then it says here, "Senate Bill SB 2099 will require us to put on our 2009-1040 federal tax form all guns that we have or own. It will require fingerprinting and a tax of $50 per weapon. This bill was introduced on February 24, 2009 by the Obama staff. However, this bill will only become public knowledge 30 days after the new law becomes effective. This is an amendment to the Internal Revenue Act of 1986. This means that the Finance Committee has passed this without the Senate voting on it at all. Trust Obama? You must be kidding. The full-page text of the IRS amendment is on the U.S. Senate homepage, which is www.senate.com, I'm sorry, .gov, and you can find the bill by doing a search by the bill number, which is SB 2099. Then it says, "You know who to call. I strongly suggest that you do so. Please send a copy of this email to every gun owner you know. Obama's Congress is not satisfied. They are now starting on the firearms confiscation bill. If it passes, gun owners will become criminals. If you don't," I must have skipped the page here, hold on. "Criminals, if you are not fingerprinted and registered all of your weapons. Very important to be aware of this new bill, H.R. 45, introduced into the House. This is a Blair Holt Firearm Licensing and Record Sales Act of 2009. Every gun shop owner, even gun shop owners, don't know about this because the government is trying to fly it under the radar as a minor IRS revision. And as usual, the political lawmakers did not read this bill before signing and approving it. To find out about it, go to any government website and type in H.R. 45 or Google H.R. 45 Blair Holt Firearm Licensing and Record of Sales Act 2009, and you will get the information." Returning to the upcoming bill, which is contemplated, all guns will be confiscated if they are not registered, if you are not fingerprinted, if you cannot supply a driver's license, Social Security number, and submit to physical and mental evaluation at any time of their choosing. Each update or change of ownership through private or public sales must be reported and cost of $25 per sale. Failure to do so automatically will cause you to lose the right to own the firearm and subject you to up to a year in jail. There's a child provision clause on page 16, section 305, stating a child access provision. The guns must be locked in an inaccessible place to any child under 18. And they would have the right to come and inspect your facility to make sure you are storing your guns safely and away from accessibility of children. Fines are possible, and punishment by imprisonment up to 5 years. If you think this is a joke, go to the website and take your pick of the many options to read about this. It is long and lengthy, but more and more people are becoming aware of this. Pass the word along. Any hunters in your family should be furious at this situation. This is just a termite's approach to complete confiscation of guns and disarming of our society to the point where we have no defense. Chip away a little here and a little there until the goal is accomplished before anyone realizes it. This is one to act on whether you own a gun or not. Because we should have the right to choose which laws we intend to live by. Please copy and send this out to everyone in the USA, whether you support the right to bear arms or not. And that's how it ends. It's not the best written thing, but it certainly gets the message across. And folks, let me tell you something. This is an absolute replay of what went on in the 1920s and 30s in Germany before the rise of Hitler. So Obama ought to grow a little black mustache, because he's certainly following in the same footsteps. And that's all I have to say on that subject.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that this Blair recently appeared in a YouTube video where a former U.S. Marine dressed him down about a whole slew of issues. And he denied actually making certain comments about military personnel, and then apologized for having made the comments. I mean, it's one or the other. Which is it? These guys lie from sentence to sentence, and the fact that this is going to be pulled, like they pulled off the Federal Reserve Act in secret, certainly not.
And the Patriot Act.
Oh yeah, and the Patriot Act, and everything else. I mean, you know, it's time to start rounding these characters up and putting them in prison, getting them off the streets, and getting their fingers off the button, if you know what I mean. I mean, this is insanity.
Exactly. Yeah, it is insanity, and there can only be one reason for it. You know as well as I do that the only purpose for disarming a society is to have total control over it. And the irony of it is, I guarantee you that if all the decent citizens comply with this upcoming nonsense and give up their firearms, it won't change a thing, because every thug and his brother will still have one. And I guarantee you that if you go into New York, Baltimore, Chicago, or L.A. with a pocket full of money, you can come out of there with anything you want, from a pistol to a rocket launcher. It's absolutely accessible to anybody that has a mind to own it. And that's always been that way. It's nothing new. If you look at what happened in Great Britain when they disarmed that country, the crime increased 700% in the first year. I didn't keep track of it after that. And then they pulled the same stunt in Australia, and it was even worse. Crime went up 1,200-something% in 1 year. And that was because all the citizens were disarmed and all the criminals had guns. So just imagine how it would be here. And not only that, but it's our right to bear arms. And now they're having a big debate over what does it mean to bear arms. Well, I don't know how you can interpret it. I mean, to me, it means that I'm allowed to have a weapon in my possession and use it if necessary. It certainly doesn't mean to have one with a welded barrel mounted on the wall in my den so that it looks nice.
Well, I think the term doesn't even, I mean, it goes beyond guns, too.
That's right.
You know?
It does.
Including the two arms attached to my body.
Well, that's so true, and there's plenty of people that are very proficient with those weapons as well.
Exactly.
What are they going to do? They're going to collect those arms also? That would make for a nice state of affairs.
Yeah. Well, you know, all of this is going on, Jim, and I hate to recapitulate, but the corruption, it goes on and on. Everything is, this financial corruption is directly related to the removal of this Eastern Front of missiles. And by no means do I think countries should have missiles aimed at other countries. I mean, you know, the whole process is insane. But there are things going on that are upsetting countries, provoking war. Look at what's going on with Iran. The same way they created this crap about Iraq. You remember they said they were trying to buy enriched uranium and from Niger, and of course that was proven to have been a lie, and now they're trying the same thing again. They're using the UN to make these announcements to make them appear to be official, and you've got three countries that have not subscribed to any non-proliferation treaties, like Israel and Pakistan and India. They all have nuclear weapons. Nothing's being done about them. And here you have these false accusations being made that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, that they have a secret program, and they put these lies out there. And so what if they do? If they do, you know, God bless them. You know, because they're not going to be bullied around by a criminal organization that's doing nothing but committing crimes against humanity. It's nonstop. That's my rant anyway, because I could, you know, I could easily do a show on that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's the same thing that they did after 9/11. Same thing, exactly.
Well, I heard a news blurb on that issue this evening around 9 o'clock, and they were talking about using uranium hexafluoride gas through diffusion membranes and then putting them into centrifuges, you know, to extract the enriched uranium. And they said that this is the kind of thing that's going on in Iraq. Well, let me tell you something. When we embarked upon that enrichment program back during the war years, the plant that was using the same principles of uranium hexafluoride gas and diffusion separation was so huge and so expensive, and that was one of the reasons for the building of the TVA authority, was to actually supply power for all of these experiments, because the amount of electricity that's needed to run all this stuff was absolutely horrendous. And they put these plants in the middle of nowhere, but even though they did that, if you happen to fly over the area, you can see them from miles and miles away, because the buildings are absolutely enormous in size, and they have to be because of what goes on inside. So, you know, they said that they have these secret laboratories underground, buried in the bedrock. Well, I don't know anything much about what goes on over there, but I can tell you this much. If they had anything that was comparable to what went on in our plants during the war, and they built them underground, I think that would require all the wealth in the Mideast to accomplish. And it would certainly not be done in a few minutes' time. You're talking about something that's absolutely astronomical in scale, and it would require enormous amounts of power. Now, where would they get all that power? If they're going to be burning, they'd have to be burning the oil that they're selling. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. And of course, if they had nuclear power, then they'd already have accomplished their goal. So it can't be coming from that. So there's something not right with the whole story. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah. Well, we're in agreement there. Okay, Jim, I know there were some other issues or topics that you'd like to discuss. They're not necessarily issues, so I apologize for using that word. It just sort of came out.
Slipped out.
Slipped out, yeah.
Well, that's true. I mean, I didn't want to stay in that somber tone all night, but, you know, it's certain things just have to be aired. I hope you know what I mean.
No, that's fine, and you're welcome, you know, if you have the urge to return to any of those topics.
Well, anyway, what I thought would be worthwhile was we had been talking now for several months on this whole concept of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about all aspects of it that I could think about. And, you know, last time we talked about the negative side of the situation and gave examples of the lower boundaries of that phenomenon. And previously we had talked about various methods of escalating yourself to the higher levels of consciousness in this minute. I thought that it would be interesting now maybe to touch upon the actual certain mechanisms that seem to give you spurts of intensive consciousness from time to time. And the reason why I think that this is an important thing to touch upon is because I'm almost convinced from conversations that I've had that there are a lot of people who have listened to this entire subject with great interest and have probably said to themselves, gee, I haven't the vaguest idea of how to accomplish any of that stuff, I feel a little left out because nothing like that ever happens to me, and I don't know how to proceed. But the fact of the matter is, I know from personal experience and also from the readings that I've done and many, many years of research and conversation with other people, that it actually happens to everybody. They don't necessarily realize what's happening, and they just dismiss it as an interesting effect. It's just like when you're walking down the hallway in your home and you reach for the phone before it rings. Everybody does this from time to time. They may not do it always, but it happens. And so, because it's so rare, they're stunned by the coincidence or the apparent coincidence at that moment, but then they dismiss it as exactly that, a coincidence, and they go on about their very lives. And in a sense, that's acceptable because it's a very short, almost unimportant event, the ringing of a phone. I mean, you know how many times phones ring during the course of a normal day in this world. So it's just taken for granted that it's no big deal. But there are other effects that occur, and some of them have really, really profound outcomes on the entire world. And those are the ones that I thought I would touch upon, or at least some of them, because I'm sure there are millions of them. And that will give us somewhat of a foundation from which we can then explore more deeply this whole idea of what do we really mean by an elevated consciousness. You know, another word for consciousness probably that might hit home is awareness. And, you know, Don and I were talking earlier this evening and touched on this idea of an awareness. And sometimes there is something that you have been exposed to for months or days or maybe even years, and you've been in the presence of it and you've seen it a million times, and somehow it just didn't register. It's not that you didn't know it was there, but you didn't grasp its significance with respect to a certain something. And it's that sudden connection, it's that sudden adding of A plus B that equals a mental explosion that is the mechanism that we're talking about. And many people may not realize it, but there have been an awful lot of technological and sociological advances in our world that stem from this very type of experience. And I did my best to pick out a few that were noteworthy and I thought I would at least mention them in passing, because almost everything on this page is something that we've all heard about and has definitely affected the lives of a good many people on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first one, I can't say anything about the inventor or the discoverer, because I don't know who the heck he was, and I doubt very much if it's recorded anywhere. But I find it very interesting to contemplate who was the person that first put the wheel to use. And God only knows who he was. But the interesting thing is, you know, we have examples of the wheel in so many aspects of nature. You know, the sun is a round disc. The moon, when it's full, appears to be a round disc. There are lots of things in the ocean and in other places which are round. If you cut down a tree, you know, and cut it perpendicular to its axis of height, more than once, you inadvertently form a wheel. So there's all kinds of ways in which that could have come about. But once it was embedded in the consciousness and the idea of making use of it, it has changed everything we know. And so there's a perfect example. How many times do you suppose in the past people were cutting up wood, cutting down trees, even sectioning trees and producing wheels without giving any real attention to what they were doing? Perhaps they were going to take the stuff home and burn it. But eventually somebody might have rolled one down a hill and say, hey, look at that. And bingo, a light went on, and before you know it, somebody decided to put an axle to connect two of them, and a new era of human consciousness is born. And that's how these things happen. The next one that I have on my list is an interesting one, because I don't know anybody who hasn't experienced moldy bread. I mean, if you don't eat it quickly enough and you don't protect it properly, mold grows on it. Of course, it has yeast in it, which accelerates that process, but the point is, mold has been around since God created the world. And yet, all the times that people looked at mold and wondered about it, studied it and whatnot, it took one particular guy to have a brainstorm about using it as a medical agent, and it was Louis Pasteur. I believe it was Louis Pasteur. And from that, of course, came penicillin, and then all your ampicillins and your streptomycins and scriptomycins, and God only knows where it went after that. But without that particular discovery, the only thing we had to fight infections were things like sulfur drugs and powdered silver. And so there's another thing that has changed the world. And again, it came about of a spark of consciousness. Somebody realized when they were looking at this stuff and studying it that it had this effect of being able to counter the activity of certain bacteria, and got the idea for using it as a medicine. Another really interesting story is the, this guy's name is lost to me. I'm sorry to say, I don't remember the name of the fellow who did this, but I believe he was a European scientist who was working on early organic chemistry, trying to understand how various organic molecules worked. And he struggled with this for the longest time. And one evening he fell asleep in front of the fireplace, and he had a dream about a snake. And the snake was biting his own tail and rolling around in a circle. And he woke up, and he realized that, in a flash of intuition, that what he was looking for was actually the ring structure of organic molecules. And today we have ring structures of so many different things, it's just justify the description. But there again, a burst of consciousness, even if it came in a dream, it didn't matter. His mind was altered during that experience, and even though he was asleep, it was elevated to the point where it created a symbology to let him know on the conscious level that there was information already processed in part of his mind which needed to be reduced to practice. And that was the reason for the dream, and he got the message. And lots of things are presented to us in dreams. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to be conscious or awake, I guess you should say, because you're always conscious. You don't have to be awake in order to experience an elevation of consciousness. It can happen when you're asleep. And according to Eastern philosophy, by the way, you're actually more conscious of the world or the universe as a whole when you are asleep. So there's a lot of ways to look at that. We then have the interesting story that Don helped me remember the name of this guy, Dr. Samuel Guthrie. He had a very intense interest in understanding how the lungs absorbed oxygen into the body. And the only way he could think of to experiment with that was he built this little beaker that had a mouthpiece on it, and he would generate different types of gases inside the beaker and put a cover on it and then inhale them to see what would happen. That's something I wouldn't do. I only have one set of lungs. But he was very brazen, and he did this research and recorded the notes. And I forget what the mixture was that he was inspired to use, but one day he tried it, and he became numb all over his face and hands and lost consciousness. And it turns out that he had inadvertently discovered ether. And when he came about, he realized that he had found a very effective way of anesthetizing a person so that they could undergo surgery. And this was immediately grabbed up by doctors and dentists of the time, and it became a routine practice. Before that, they used to have to tie you down when they were operating on you and hope you didn't go into shock or hope you didn't die from loss of blood. And dentistry was a real joy. They would just, you know, pry your mouth open and chisel out the bad tooth, and you had to live with it. So there's another example of how an inspiration and a sudden elevation of consciousness has changed things. Of course, my favorite one is the story of how Nikola Tesla invented the three-phase motor. And, you know, he had been very ill, and he was walking in the park in Budapest with a classmate of his by the name of Zagetti. And it was late in the afternoon, and the sun was setting. And he and his friend were very much enamored with the poetry of Faust. And Tesla was reciting from Faust. And he was watching the sun go down. And all of a sudden, he just had an experience. And he was staring at the orb of the sun, and in his mind, he saw the spinning vortex, and he saw the way it went together. And he was just sucked into the fabric of a higher consciousness for a moment. But in that moment, he was given many gifts. And he turned right around and drew them all out in the sand and showed his friend the circuits and how everything worked. And we all know how that changed the world. I mean, we went from primitive DC motors that require all kinds of current and very inefficient in their operation to three-phase motors, three-phase transformers, transmission systems that can send power for hundreds and hundreds of miles. This all came from watching a sunset. that's a very, very powerful thing. And actually, whether or not any of us are on the par with Nikola Tesla or not doesn't matter. The important thing is these things happen to every human being at some level or another. And the important thing is not whether or not it leads to a great discovery or whether it's just something trivial. What's important, though, is that you recognize it for what it is. When circumstances are right and your mind is elevated spontaneously and without any effort on your part, very probably this is one of these spikes of consciousness that we're talking about. And, of course, the more you give in to that type of thing, the more frequently they happen to you. And sooner or later, it just becomes a way of life, and you're at a different plateau of existence. Wouldn't you agree with that, Don? Do you think that's a fair description?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. In fact, I want to save face for both of us. So on the issue of penicillin and the discoverer of penicillin, Pasteur's work was discovering bacteria, number one, and then, of course, the process of sterilization of certain liquids, milk in particular, and that process of pasteurization is credited to him. His bacteriological discoveries were noticed by Sir Alexander Fleming, who is credited in 1928 of having invented penicillin. So I thought I would just mention that. He even received the Nobel Prize for that.
Well, I'm glad you clarified it. I didn't remember without, with certainty. But, again, it's not so much who invented it as how it happened.
Yeah, it's the idea. But it was interesting that here you have the one who discovers bacteria and the other one who was a bacteriologist. So obviously he was influenced by Pasteur's work. No doubt about that. But I agree with you. You know, your example of the reaching for the phone right before it rings, often
yes.
I know who's on the other end too. I mean, there's quite a bit of synchronicity going on that two conscious people will take note of right away. Often you call someone and they say, "I was just thinking of you."
Exactly.
And of course, a lot of people say that anyway, whether it's true or not, but we're speaking about the occasions when that really occurs. I have that happen to me all the time. I'm thinking of someone and they call out of the clear blue. Now there's a communication that's going on that most people are not aware of. And that's exactly what you're alluding to, that it's natural for that to occur. It's right in front of our faces. Right in front of our noses, at least. And nature is certainly one avenue that shows that and proves that point over and over again. So I'm in agreement with you.
Well, that's good. I know that we've both experienced things of that sort and in our perspective fields of endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I believe that everybody experiences this stuff. They just don't dwell on its importance because they just feel that it's a strange thing that happens from time to time or a coincidence or however they write it off.
Yeah.
But it's important to be cognizant of it
and
to dwell on it because that's how you engender it.
Well, it makes a very good research tool, too. I can tell you that.
Well, I think we talked about it on one show, that one of the exercises for increasing awareness is to develop your intuition.
Yes.
And women seem to have a better handle on that than men do, but even so, a guy can do the same experiments that a female can. And one of the easiest things to do is when you need to know what time it is, don't look at your watch. Just whatever the number that pops into your head, just say, you know, like it's 12:15. And then check it with your watch, and you'll be surprised how close you are to it. And then if you do this often enough, you'll always know what time it is. You won't even need to watch. And it's that kind of knowing that somehow opens up corridors of the mind that allow you to access these higher realms. And once you do it on a regular basis, take it from me, it becomes second nature. You just wind up living sort of between two worlds, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen that very thing you're talking about even go to a different step, and a lot of people are remarking that they're having these experiences where they look up at a clock, say a digital clock, where it's extremely noticeable because you see the numerals right there before your eyes. They'll see a sequence of numbers. For instance, they'll look at the clock, and it'll say 1:23 or 1:23. And those clocks that have a second hand, or I should say second numeral, it'll often say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right at the moment they look at it. And there's definitely something going on there with their consciousness, and that symbology of the time has everything to do with the path that they're on and where their focus is, and it's alluding to an elevation of consciousness or a revelation that's about to occur. And I have this happen to me a lot. I'm sure you do, and many of our listeners.
I do have it happen a lot, and as a matter of fact, it's funny you should bring that up because I hadn't thought of it. But now that you reminded me, I'll share this interesting little anecdote with you. I have been waking up in the middle of the night quite frequently with ideas for the past few years, and even before that, it was even more frequent. But the interesting thing I've noticed here in the last 2 years or so, if I'm sleeping on my right-hand side and I'm facing the night table where I have the clock, a lot of times it's the weirdest way to wake up. I mean, I just open my eyes. I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't feel like the normal way to wake up, but I just open my eyes, and the first thing I see is the clock. And I don't know how many times it has happened that the time has been 3.14. And, of course, those are the first few digits of pi.
Pi, yes. Maybe subconsciously you have a hankering for a nice slice of pie.
Well, I've had a hankering for pie, but not necessarily at that hour of the morning. But anyway, that happens. Numbers definitely come into play. And I'll tell you another thing that happened quite frequently to me. I used to have this little calculator that this friend of mine in upstate New York gave me, and it was the first little pocket calculator that had all the scientific features on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried that thing around with me for years. I don't know whatever happened to it, but while I had it, I used to whip it out and just start doing calculations at a moment's notice if I had some kind of an idea. And at that time, I was working on the mathematics associated with the pyramid. I was really, really into that. And had a lot of theories about it, and I would get these inspirations, and I would be writing on napkins or the corner of a tablecloth or some piece of paper that I ripped off a bag or something, and I'd always have this calculator. And I don't know how many times it happened that I would have the number in my head and go to enter it, and it was already on the screen.
Hmm.
And I can't tell you the first few times it happened, I said, how the heck did that get there? You know, I didn't touch it yet. I just turned it on. But that happened many, many times. So not only do we have this link to a higher consciousness, but I think that the vibrations of involved with that and the forces associated with it can actually affect other objects and other things in our environment. And if you stop and think about it, you have a microchip inside of a processor. The forces necessary to implement a change in the current flow, especially when it's in the microampere region, might be very, very small forces. And so it's not inconceivable that you could affect the calculating machine. I know when I was really investigating telekinesis quite some time ago, I invented a lot of experiments to try and see if you use your mind to influence physical objects. And actually, you don't want to start off with something like an anvil because, you know, it's just a little bit too much for a beginner. So,
yeah. A little too hard.
I used to take and get a pin and put it through a block of wood and then balance on top of that a little paper pyramid. And then I would take and put a glass globe over the top of it so that air currents and stuff wouldn't affect it. And I got very good at moving that thing just by moving my hands around the outside. And then eventually I didn't need my hands. And I could make it spin to the left, spin to the right, you know, do all kinds of things like that. So these forces are real, and I don't think there's any human being that can't access them with some effort.
Yeah, everyone has the inherent capacity to do those things. It always becomes a question of whether they reach the level of consciousness to do that. And really, it's not something that is achieved by any loss of anything else. In fact, it's all about moving into the reality of who we really are and exercising our true inner power, which leads me to something in general. You're describing the process of consciousness when one pays attention, one is aware of it. You see, you can't see the numbers on the clock if you don't look at it. But then again, you can sense, you have the ability, we all have this ability within us to sense time in one way or another. Now, sometimes when we're really enjoying what we're doing, the time flies. It seems to be flying like crazy tonight during this show. There are some things that we do that are real drudgery, and we loathe having to do them, and time seems to slow down. Well, it's all based on our perception, our consciousness of what's actually occurring and why we're doing something or why we're not doing something impacts the whole experience. We make judgments about things, saying that this is bad or this is good. Obviously, if it's usurping one's free will, and that free will given to them by God, then that's something certainly, you know, to address. That in and of itself is one of those acts that you could say is a bad thing or an evil thing, and you're pretty much going to find a lot of people that agree with that statement. But ultimately, when you're outside of the box, so to speak, and you're watching how things are run on this planet, and you see all the control mechanisms that are there, once you recognize that, you already have opened that gate or that door, that corridor, as you were describing it, that is a pathway to a higher form of information that's been blocked off, that's been inaccessible to us because we have refused to acknowledge it's there for one reason or another. Either we were discouraged from looking to understand it and be in touch with it, or we were told that it didn't exist, or we were forbidden to tap into it. And when you get to a certain point and realize the madness of this system, that the things that they claim that they're fixing, the things that they're making better, are actually getting worse. you even realize that they're lying about it, that all the talk about it doesn't make it happen, and it never has. But they seem to be on this path that the only worthwhile things that they can accomplish is of a destructive nature. And so destroy life, destroy nature, destroy everything. Think of that. That's absolute insanity and psychopathy. And yet it's accepted. These are the people that call themselves our leaders, so we blindly follow, not knowing that the answers are right in front of us. And I think that's the essence of what you're saying. Didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but I'm trying to encapsulate what you're describing here, how it applies to everyday life.
Right, and it also applies to not everyday life or things that are beyond everyday life. One of the best examples of that, in my opinion, is alchemy. I've always had a great interest in alchemy, and I've read voraciously on the subject. And the interesting thing that all the authors who are prominent in that field say is that you can study it for years and experiment and play around with it and invest all your energy into it. But the only way that you really get to understand it...
We lost your audio a little bit, Jim.
Hello?
No, yeah, we lost your audio. You sounded quite muted.
Oh, that's strange. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Okay.
I was starting to say that you can study alchemy for years and put all your time and energy into it and become familiar with it and experiment with it and what have you, but every author that's ever written on the subject says that it's only when you have a divine inspiration that allows you to see how these things work on another level that you master the subject. And nobody will ever tell you how to do it because... it's something that supposedly is a gift from the Almighty. Well, I'm not an alchemist, but I do know about gifts from God. And I can tell you this much. When you are, favored with an inspiration about something, in my case, it's usually technical stuff, it's absolutely, indisputable, at least in your eyes, that this is something from beyond yourself. And you can feel the surge of your own consciousness because it's a very amazing thing what happens to you. The best way I can describe it is to say that two things happen, actually. First of all, your truth meter pegs. And it's a really strange feeling because it could be something you know nothing about, but the first thing that happens is you get this feeling that it's absolutely correct, even though you don't know what the first thing about it. It comes to you in such a way that you immediately say, ah, I know that's true. I don't even have to think about it. I may not understand the details, but I know it's true. And then the second thing that you become aware of is the foreign nature of the source. You know it's not something that originated within you. It's in information that's injected somehow by a process of elevation to wherever that information is available from. And the thing that's so fascinating about it is it's totally irreversible. Once you are made aware of something, especially if it's something important, you can't decide the next day, oh, gee, I don't want to know this. It's there. It becomes a part of you. You can't turn it off. And so consciousness is forever building in that respect. And this is one of the reasons why I honestly believe that the mission of each of us on this planet is to evolve in consciousness and to eventually reach a state where you are some other kind of being. I don't know when that happens, but a good example of it would be Christ and some of the other prophets that have been here and have reached those kinds of levels where they have attained a God consciousness. And that's the supreme goal. That's the ultimate thing that you can achieve without being dead.
I agree with you. And if I may comment, Jim, I think it's at the point where one gives up illusions that that the consciousness is accelerated. In fact, every illusion recognized as such automatically opens up the opportunity for an increase in awareness. And that the fact that you're able to see the illusion as for what it is, an illusion, frees one from the constraints of that. And that is the whole mechanism by which this society is run on a global scale, where their intention is to create laws that really are only to be followed by us and not them. Somehow they're excluded from that, including other criminals, let's say, like to use a reference of gun control. And you made a very valid comment that always comes up when this is argued: who's going to take the guns away from the criminals? Well, the criminals keep the wheels greased. They move the drugs. Those elements are there to participate in tandem with other elements of corruption, to give the illusion that certain things are happening that open up the opportunities for them to take away more of our freedoms. And it's all a perspective. It's not seeing for the illusion for what it is that keeps us in bondage. And so, you know, what you're describing really is a way of liberation too, on a spiritual level.
I read a comment today. It was really strange because I was downloading information about solutions of integrals, which certainly had nothing to do with what came out of the machine. But at the bottom of one of these pages that I downloaded, there was a two-sentence, I don't remember the words exactly, but basically what it said was, cause a people to believe that they are free and governing themselves, and you have devoted slaves forever. And that falls right in line with what you're saying about all these laws and the illusion of the way things are set up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only once you realize that it is, in fact, an illusion, that you can step back from it and say, I don't want to play that game anymore. You know what it reminds me of? Did you ever see these paintings? I don't know what they're called, but they have these really complicated designs and stuff on them, and if you hang one on the wall, it just looks like it's modern art or something. And then if you stare at it and you look at it just the right way, all of a sudden it opens up, and you see a vista that is disguised in that conglomeration of lines,
mm-hmm.
and colors. And these things were pretty popular for a while. They even had whole books full of these unusual drawings and paintings. And that's how the world really works. There are like two levels of reality, in a sense. There's the one that's designed to accommodate the meat machine, which is your body, and then there's a higher level, and it's actually, it's kind of occupying the same space and the same time and everything else, but it's not aware, it's not an awareness for you until you reach a point where you suddenly say, oh, that's how it works. And it's been there all along. It's an amazing feeling.
Yes. Yeah, what you're describing is sort of a multi-dimensional kind of artwork, And there are some painters that use that. There are some people that do sand art that accomplishes the same effect, where you're looking at an image which seems to be predominant, but as you look at the detail, you see other images within those images. Probably one of the most prolific artists in the history of the world was Hans Giger from Switzerland. I was fortunate enough to meet him many years ago, and he was the inventor of what we call the airbrush, the Spritzpistolett, it was called in German, and it's a spray gun, basically, is what it is, that gets attached to a compressor device that feeds the paint into this sprayer, and depending on which tip you used, you got a certain spray pattern. And Giger made these huge murals that, as you looked at them, you could see the whole image inside the whole image, and as you moved closer to it, you could see the various divisions of the same thing replicating it. So where you had one big picture, you had two or more of the same thing in a smaller version worked into the picture. I mean, it's very multidimensional. It's the only way you can describe it. And yet that's what this consciousness is like. And he just interpreted it into his artwork, down to the finest details. And let's say it was a head of a person that you were looking at in the largest macro representation of the piece. As you got closer, you saw that the eye was the same image. Both eyes were the same image, and yet he had a clever way of disguising it. It was very, very unique, and it would open one's consciousness to look at this and to study this and see this, because someone is pulling you outside of the normal constraints of the space that you're in because of your education and your religious upbringing, and what you were taught and the emotional traumas that you went through in your life. All these things have an impact on either stifling consciousness or allowing it to release on its own. So I want to just confirm what you're describing, that I've actually had the experience of meeting somebody who was a master at creating that kind of art. You know, he was a friend of Salvador Dali, who in his own way interpreted objects by making them do strange things, hanging melting clocks over tree branches, symbolic of a definite political statement, but also one of metaphysics and consciousness.
Yeah, I like some of Dali's work. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So
getting back to those kind of pictures you were talking about, even some of the simpler images can sometimes have a double effect. Like there's a very famous one of a rabbit, and it's a white rabbit against a black background. And if you look at it one way, you see the rabbit, and if you change your point of view, you suddenly see a duck with its beak open. And then there's those other things that are kind of interesting, where you have the one that I like a lot is called Vanity. And it's a picture of a beautiful woman sitting in front of her a settee with a mirror, and she's on a bench, and there's a lace hanging from the bench, and she's brushing her hair. And then if you turn and look at it another way, it's this really ugly skull with the teeth missing and big black eyes, and it's like the two sides of Vanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really interesting thing. But all of this is just to point out that consciousness is not something we have no control over. You can definitely learn to elevate your consciousness. You can also learn to sidestep all the trappings of the world and look at things from a different perspective. And I was pretty moved, to be honest with you, a couple of weeks ago when 3 million people showed up in Washington, D.C. To me, that's a pretty good indication that a lot of people are waking up. And I don't think that that this administration is going to be allowed to do the things that they want to do. I just think that it's gone far enough, and I think people are fed up. And it isn't about being a Democrat or a Republican. It isn't about being black or white. I remember reading a thing a couple of weeks ago where Obama said that his plans will definitely succeed because if anybody tries to impeach him, the black community of America will not tolerate it. I think I think that's a lot of nonsense. The black people here want the same thing as all the rest of us do, and it's a shame that the man that they backed isn't going to cut the mustard. But if he thinks that he's going to use the race card, you know, to support himself when he's screwing them as well as us, I don't think people are that stupid. I really don't.
No, they're not. And what I find interesting is that he is acting as if somehow he has inherited this birthright because of him being a black American, of which he is neither. I'll say that. He's no more American than apple strudel is. I almost use it. Apple strudel, okay? I mean, actually, apple strudel's been around a lot longer, you know? being conscious of the whole thing is, you know, it's like we have to kowtow to a criminal who has no business being there. You know, let's look at it, you know, I'm using my awareness, my consciousness. You know, it's not just the argument of what that person is trying to do. That person has no business being there. Let's wake up to what's going on. Ugh.
Well, and you were alluding earlier in the show to, you know, some of the stuff that's going on in these other countries with the missiles and all of this. You know, there are deals going on behind the scenes that are not reported. And, you know, him removing the missiles is one way of gaining favor from the Russians and trying to get them to support whatever he's intending to do in Afghanistan and probably other things.
Well, it had a lot to do, Jim, it had a lot to do with them trying to launder some money through a Russian bank, and they got caught, you see. So he can't back up what he's claiming. You see, there's a lot of bribery going on. There's a lot of blackmail and extortion going on. And they're murdering people, too.
Oh, heck yeah. Did you read that article? I guess it was last week that said it looks like the establishment is killing off all its lieutenants in anticipation of turning state's evidence. How many guys died in the course of like a month and a half? It was something like 15 or 20.
Yeah.
You know, and they all committed suicide.
I know. I was going to say that. Yeah. They ought to teach you this in college when you're going for that degree in accounting or political science that you're prone to commit suicide, whether you know it or not. You know.
Yeah, it's really out of hand. It really is.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of minutes left here, Jim. Is there anything that you want to encapsulate in this? Because, as you know, we can do show after show on this topic, and you know, I feel a change in my consciousness every time we talk about it, and I feel in many ways I am conscious about a lot of things anyway, but it causes me to think about things. You know, when you were describing these things, I was thinking of all the people in the military that are listening to us, and I was imagining what it would be like to be in a firefight where, you know, I'm shot at first, and I return fire as a matter of self-defense at that point. And at some point, whether, you know, based on what transpires and based on the outcome, one or both of those engaged in that firefight between opposing factions must come to some realization that there might be another way to solve whatever the problem is. But first of all, the problem has to really be identified. Those doing the shooting aren't necessarily aware of what the real problem is. They're only going by what they were told the problem is, you see. And so they're cheated of the opportunity of becoming conscious, although such an experience, such as a firefight, where that for that fleeting moment that person says, is it really necessary for me to kill this person who's shooting at me for this to stop? You see? And so at that point, that person has stepped outside the box, like you were describing, and there's no turning back. They're always going to have that in the back of their mind, if not part of their everyday conscious thought. And it doesn't mean that that makes them any less of a soldier or any more effective at what they do, but it really questions who they are and what their role in life is at that particular moment. And it could lead them to make a very interesting discovery. Maybe something in the sciences, something involving healing, something involving real politics. And I don't mean the what we're witnessing, but I mean real statesmanship, real ambassadorship, where people are coming together for that reason and only that reason. So,
well, you know, getting back to what you were describing, a person who is in that position and who has volunteered to be there is actually operating on a higher principle in the first place, because he or she is putting themselves unselfishly in the line of potential danger for the sake of a principle that they believe in, which is they believe that they're doing something on behalf of their country. What really aggravates me, and I mean to the point of becoming furious, is the realization that our men and women are dying in these obscure places, fighting for whatever the excuse is this year, and they're being sent to their deaths, or worse, because some of them come back with eyes, arms, and legs missing, etc., by a company that has its own agenda. And I think if people really grasp what that means, they don't have to elevate their consciousness any higher than that, and you'll see some real changes in this country. How would you like it if GE or Westinghouse came to you and said, we need your son to go and risk his life to do this, that, or the other thing? I think you'd tell them where to go. But the fact that a corporation that's illegal in the first place and making believe that they are the bona fide government of this nation has given themselves the authority to dictate where these people go and what they risk their lives for is infuriating to me. Even more so than all the other garbage that they're responsible for. And I guess you might say that's my rant.
No, but what you're saying is true. It's true. It's very accurate. It's what's going on. And
they're capitalizing on the emotions of pride, dedication, and patriotism that these people are endowed with, and the people that are in our armed forces are doing this stuff because they believe that it's the right thing to do on behalf of our nation. And I think if they really understood that it's on behalf of some tinhorn company, that they would be really, really annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Say the least.
No, it doesn't invalidate the principle behind why they are there.
No.
It just clarifies the fact that that they could still be doing that work. For instance, they could be here protecting our country, protecting the borders of our country, and not in a tyrannical way, you know. Imagine that we were going through that invasion, and we're seeing the harbinger of that right now. But imagine that we were under the type of attack that went on in Iraq, or Kuwait, or Afghanistan, or Korea, or many other places around the world that you don't even hear about. How would we be reacting under those circumstances? And we need to think about that, because that's being done from within right now. That's by design. They're crippling the country at on every level, and trying to rake up and steal as much as they possibly can before they cut and run to wherever that might be. But they couldn't cut and they couldn't run fast enough for me. That's my rant again.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a very upsetting subject, and I'd much rather talk about science and engineering. I mean, we could do some really exciting shows on that. But the climate right now is such that I think to avoid these topics would be incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody needs to talk out about it, and somebody needs to share these types of thoughts with people out there who are on the fence and don't really understand the full picture and are not sure which way to go. But the irony of it is, if they succeed in all these things, then it'll be very obvious which way to go, but it'll also be too late.
Mm-hmm.
The question that I've always contemplated, and I talked it over with my dad when he was still living, was that if the Americans, the Canadians, and the Brits hadn't entered the war, the last war, and Europe took over, Europe was taken over by Germany completely, who would ever rectify that situation? Who else would have been there to free them? Well, the irony of it is, now that it's happening here, and our country is the one that's in jeopardy. And if we go down the tubes, who's going to save our necks? You know, these people want to build a Reich, a Fourth Reich, that's going to last for 1,000 years, and they brag about doing it on the ruins of America. And I don't know about you, Don, but I'll tell you something. I won't live in a nation like that.
Well, they're doing that to turn the whole world into what you're describing. They see this as the last bastion, as we've said on so many other shows. And, America fails, the rest of the world is going to fail. But they're not, other than what we hear behind the scenes, the listening audience to a show like this, and other shows like this, people are looking for answers. There are people, but as far as the governments are concerned, they're all in it together. I mean, the sooner we all wake up to that, as nations around the world, the sooner, we'll begin working together. And that is occurring on some levels already, but not in the numbers that we'd all like to see, of course. It's not necessary that all those people get involved. They've never been involved in major transformations of societal consciousness or the uplifting of humanity's consciousness. It's almost like it's achieved accidentally or because of some quirk of fate that didn't allow the missions like the current one underway to succeed. Maybe because of divine intervention, and certainly, that is an option that we have, as is at the crux of tonight's topic, and developing one's consciousness. out of that comes empowerment. Some people say, well, why should I do that? You know, is it going to make me money? Well, yeah, it'll make you abundant. You'll experience true abundance and true knowledge, and you become a powerful person. What's wrong with that? You might have to give up some things, but you'll come to realize that they're not really worth having, and they never were. You just didn't see it. You just didn't know it. And when you reach that higher level of consciousness, you'll know. Well, Jim, it's a topic that we could keep moving back and forth with for another hour or two, but we've got to say goodnight. I want to thank you for being on the show tonight and making the show so interesting.
Well, I'm glad that it was successful, at least I hope it was. And like I said, I would love to be talking about Tesla stuff or my inventions or stuff like that. But right now, I think this is a very important message to stay with, because speaking of consciousness, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but the fact that these people have stepped up their timetable and they are pulling one filthy trick after another and passing laws as fast as they can write them, and they're getting ready to do something. And I think it's a last-ditch effort. That's the way I look at it. They're either going to succeed in taking over this country and turning it into some type of a socialistic organization, or they're going to fail. And the outcome of that is greatly dependent upon what we do as a nation and as a world. You know, I mean, I think this world has been in the dregs for several thousand years. It's about time to see the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, Jim, and I would choose the latter and say they're going to fail. And that's indicative of how rapidly they're trying to take over, is because they feel that their iron-fisted grip on humanity is slipping. And it is. It is.
Well, let's hope so. I would like to see this planet return to God consciousness and prosperity and be ruled by people with wisdom and love instead of...
I lost your audio again.
What's that?
Oh, I just lost your audio again. You said you'd like to see it with God consciousness, and after that I didn't hear a word you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I said, and ruled with wisdom and love instead of what we got now.
Yes, exactly. Wisdom, love, light, and the truth. I think that would do it for most of us.
Amen.
Okay. Well, Jim, I wish you a great weekend. Thanks for being on tonight's show, and look forward to your reappearance next week at this same time, same place. You have a great weekend.
Thank you, Don. Same to you.
Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Jim Murray. If you would like to see some of Jim's inventions, there's a page on my website, DirectLightProductions.com. Click over to photos at the top of any page, and there's actually a Jim Murray photo page. It shows one of his electrical devices that he built for Bethlehem Steel many years ago. And these are just that's just one example. Actually, there's a couple of saucer shots there. Also, no swamp gas in the picture, by the way. No crash dummies, no weather balloons. Just a shot of a UFO under construction in a facility in the United States. I'm pleased to have Jim on tonight's show and look forward to his reappearance next week. Special thanks also to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for airing tonight's show, whether live or on a rebroadcast. And special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a great weekend. I ask that you continue to pray for Don Harkins and his wife, Ingrid Castle Harkins. There's a memorial celebration for Don's life later on today, and I say today, meaning on the 26th, Saturday. And if you're in his hometown area, you've probably heard about that already. Get in touch with Ingrid if you'd like to attend. And we're going to miss him. I'll probably have more to share with you at a later date. But in the meantime, let's just keep our prayers focused on Ingrid's safety and her recovery from the grief that she's going through. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.